Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Sandy Bob Blog Talk Radio Show. It's Tuesday, January 15th at it's 12 o'clock Central Standard Time, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and 10 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Our Wisconsin weather is pretty much miserable. We have freezing drizzle coming down. So we are jealous of anybody in the warmer climates right now. So I would like to welcome today and thank Dr. John Scheindel, who we have on our show today. He is an acupuncturist among many other modalities, and he comes from the Marshfield Acupuncture. He has over 20 years of experience in natural health care. I would like to ask Dr. Scheindel how he got interested in acupuncture and how it led to where he is today. Dr. Scheindel?
All right. Well, we'll give you the shorter version here. I was actually supposed to go to medical school. My mom was a regular doctor, and I chose not to. And I went to school for physical therapy, was going there. My mom got diagnosed with cancer. So I kind of stopped that pursuit. And so I had originally been doing martial arts since I was about 5 years old. So I kind of grew up in the whole Chinese martial community. And that was much more in line with what I wanted, natural health care, herbs, stuff like that. And so just wasn't a real career opportunity in the Midwest at that point. And by the time my mom had actually passed away, it had become more of an opportunity, so I started off going to school for acupuncture.
Very good.
Actually, the whole of Chinese medicine. I did acupuncture, herbs, Tuanan, nutrition, physiotherapy, all of it.
Okay, that's great. I myself had gone to a Chinese acupuncturist and traditional Chinese massage doctor up in St. Pete when I lived in Florida. And it's a wonderful, wonderful alternative to Western medicine, which I don't like, never did. Even my grandmother never liked it.
Explain what acupuncture is.
Yeah, could you explain what acupuncture actually is?
And how it works.
Sure.
How it works.
There are multiple styles of acupuncture, but they all have one thing in common. The acupuncture inserts very, very fine needles. They're anywhere between 30 and 38 gauge needles inserted into these acupuncture points along these pathways called meridians that are kind of like highways on the body. And these acupuncture needles control the flow and movement of blood and energy in the body to stimulate healing, to stimulate homeostasis or proper functioning of the body. They do a lot of very different things, and it's been scientifically validated in a number of ways, and that's actually continuing to grow.
Thank you. I understand that you are a diplomat of Oriental medicine, and you got your certification in China, right?
Well, the certification is here through the National Certification Commission of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. I've trained in the United States, Japan, and China, and I hold some advanced doctorates as well.
Okay. You also do Chinese. Go ahead.
Nope. I was going to say there's a little bit of a difference. States regulate licensure. The National Board certifies me as a diplomat of Oriental Medicine, which means all fields of Chinese medicine. So there's just a little bit of a difference that some people not in the field might not just get the understanding of. Even physicians, MDs, et cetera, the chiropractors, they're all regulated by state law. There is no national medical license. It'd be nice if there was. It makes things a lot easier when we move.
For sure. Yeah, it becomes a little difficult at times in the States. It really does, and it's a shame. I know... years ago when I lived in Honolulu, my son, who was 11 at the time, ended up with diabetes 1. And, of course, we took him in, and he, at the time, it was Dr. Yoshimoto was his physician. And I heard about Dr. Robert Oshiro, who did Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And so I thought, I'm just going to take my son in there and see what he can do for him. And I told my regular physician, and he said, well, that's great. He says, I would be willing to work with him. So they worked one-on-one for my son, and I took my son for acupuncture treatments, and he got a lot of Japanese elixirs. Both doctors were Japanese, and he had to have so many brewer's yeast tablets a day. He had to have azuki beans, which took the sugar out of his blood. He had to have acorn squash and plenty of protein. But we got him off of insulin in 2 weeks through
excellent
that treatment. Mm-hmm. So
and
it's amazing.
I love to hear stories.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you there.
That's okay.
I do love to hear stories like that where physicians are working in concert. I've had practices in the Northwest Chicago suburbs in the Milwaukee area, practiced in other countries. And whenever you can get the healthcare providers, even if they don't always agree, but at least working towards the same common goal, the patient ultimately is the one that benefits.
That's for sure worked with us. It was amazing. And my son kept feeling better and better and better. And so anyway, I was going to ask you about dry needling in acupuncture.
Okay, well, it's kind of a hotbed topic in some parts of the United States. In some states, the attorneys general have stated that dry needling is not part of a physical therapist's scope of practice since it's an invasive technique and nothing on their education is in invasive techniques. States like Wisconsin here, they're allowed to do it. And there is some benefit to it. Dry needling is a deep, strong needling similar to a traditional Chinese acupuncture technique into a trigger point to release that trigger point. It's about 10% of what the whole of acupuncture is. So part of it falls underneath what we would consider acupuncture as acupuncturists. For instance, sometimes we do needle trigger points. And there are other styles like my primary style called Dung style, spelled T-U-N-G, but pronounced kind of like dung, that actually almost never stick a needle where it hurts, but get incredible results very quickly.
Right. I have experienced pain through some acupuncturists myself. It's not pleasant. But sometimes... go ahead.
Yeah, that strong needle sensation is called da qi, or arrival of energy in Chinese medicine. And a traditional Chinese acupuncturist does that quite a bit because that is the way traditional Chinese acupuncture works. Although I know that style, I've since moved on to some different styles that arguably work a little bit better, get people better quicker, use fewer needles, and are generally a little bit more comfortable, which is great for the American population because they don't really often care to be treated like that. There's nothing wrong with that kind of treatment. It works very well. I've used it. It's just a matter of, you know, kind of suiting your treatments to your population. Because if people get really uncomfortable, they don't come back, and then you can't help them.
Well, this is true. This is so true. I know what that's like. Been there, done it. Could you tell us a little bit about the Chinese herbs? You are a Chinese herbalist?
I am. And Chinese herbs, unlike acupuncture, where you kind of have to do something very, very outside of normal practice to even hurt somebody, it's extremely safe. Herbal medicine is very complicated, and if you don't know what you're doing, you could hurt someone. For example, Western herbalism. You have anxiety or trouble sleeping. Oh, take this herb called valerian root. Chinese herbalism. Well, what's your pattern in Chinese medicine? Is it spleen, qi, and heart blood deficiency? By the way, that's one of the more common ones. It simply means that you lay awake at night worrying like crazy, and then when you try and sleep, you're very restless. That's an oversimplification, but you get the idea. And we would use a formula called Xunzao Rintang. And now that formula has a bunch of herbs in it that work in synergistic concert with one another. It's not a single herb. Some of those herbs potentiate the effects of other herbs. And in other formulas with very strong herbs, some of the herbs are there to make the formula safer. So you really, Where doing acupuncture is much more safe and quickly learned, herbalism is a very complex form of Chinese medicine. And in fact, most doctors in China are primarily herbalists. They'll take your pulse for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden they start rattling all these childhood diseases you had off. It's just amazing to see. These guys are incredible.
Yes, they are. How I started with the acupuncturist in St. Pete, Florida, was I worked in St. Pete for a while, and I was walking. No, not wasn't walking. I was driving down the street, and I saw this Oriental herbal place, acupuncture with herbs, and it just intrigued me, and I kept driving by it day after day, and I thought, you know what, I am going to go in there. And so I did, and his whole wall was lined with wooden boxes that contained herbs, many different kinds of herbs, and they had glass cases of seahorses, et cetera, but at that time, which I hope he didn't decide to make a tea out of for me. But, go ahead. That's a traditional treatment with it, isn't it?
Yep. And it's a traditional Chinese apothecary where they're using the raw herbs. You take them home, boil them down. It's very smelly, and you drink the tea. So that's the way that's done in China, although it's done in the hospitals on a huge setting. I mean, you go home with vacuum-packed teas as a patient in China that were made for you. Now, it's a little harder to do in America that way. Some do. I have some colleagues that still use a lot of raw herbs. I use a granule herb pharmacy because I can custom compound the granules. I can put them in the capsules. You get a little bit higher patient compliance. It's almost as strong as the tea, not as strong. And then there's another level below that a little bit, which would be herbal capsules or tablets. And in China, those are considered like Advil. They're over-the-counter herbs. But in America, you get them from a licensed practitioner so that you know what you're doing.
Right. You just don't want to order off the internet. You think you read about something, you think you know it, you know what you have, and then you go ahead and order it. And Chinese, like medicine, is very complicated. I know that there were three of us who always went to my Chinese doctor, and, of course, he gave us the teas that you were talking about. And mine didn't taste too bad. And the other gal, it was okay. But the other gal, she says, mine tastes like swamp water. And I think mine had a little bit more cinnamon and licorice in it. But it is a strong brew for sure. What were you going to say? I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. I was just letting you finish. And what happens is, again, with the herbs, it comes down to that pattern differentiation. Chinese herbs, and even acupuncture, really, they're not, 10 people could come in for a headache. It's all based on their pattern. That's why it works so well for so many people of varying different, you know, types of headaches. Using our previous example of the sleeping formula, that one was for spleen, qi, and heart blood deficiency. Well, you might have liver qi stagnation instead, and in that case, and maybe some heat in the blood. And we might then use a formula called jiawei xiaoyaoan. So there's I think the English translation for that one is relaxed wanderer or free and easy wanderer augmented. It all kind of depends on how you translate it. Which means nothing to the general person. And it, you know, because you're not a doctor of Chinese medicine, and that's okay. That's why you go to somebody who knows what they're doing. Just going to Amazon or whatever, I love Amazon. I use them all the time. But just using them as an example and ordering a formula because you read about it on the internet could make you worse, not better. Now, you're probably not going to horribly hurt yourself because it isn't as strong as that tea formula. Now, if we give the wrong tea to somebody, it can make them sicker.
Sure, for sure. Yeah, when I went in there, the husband or the doctor himself did not speak English, and the wife spoke a little bit, but there wasn't even needed to diagnose me. She looks at me. She was a physician also, and she goes, you sit down now. And what they brought me was some cortex eukomia. Evidently, my blood pressure was pretty high at that time. And and he also sent me home with the Shoyu one and the Gleepy one and Corey Dallas I had also.
And asked more for pain. But see, so you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So yeah, it's a very complex form of medicine, and no, you don't necessarily need to speak a language. Heck, for acupuncture, you don't need to be able to see. Some of the best acupuncturists in Japan are blind, so they don't do the tongue diagnosis in Japan like we do with traditional Chinese herbs. They do a hara diagnosis, which is a type of abdominal palpation, and these. If you become blind in Japan, they will send you to school for acupuncture as kind of a job retraining. So now you can still work, be productive in society. You don't have to live on a disability of some sort. You can still do very good things.
I had not heard about that. I think that's fantastic, really.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. One of the people I trained with, Kiku Matsumoto, teaches acupuncture at Harvard, trained under Master Nagano in Japan, who is a blind acupuncturist.
Wow, I'm amazed. But then again, you know, I know that it works, and one time you may go and he would prescribe, or you probably do too, a certain protocol. Next time you go, things have changed in your body.
Yeah, we follow the pattern, so... So with the teas, you might only get 7 to 10 days of one tea. With the granules, you might get a month, and it has to change. It kind of depends on what you're treating at the time. There's something called root and branch, or pattern imbalance and symptoms. And those things, and constitution for that matter, which is just who you are. There's a blend of all those three things, and it's dynamic. It changes. There's an old Chinese expression, you can never step into the same river twice. Well, because if you step in it again, not only has the river changed, time has passed and you have changed.
Very good. That's so true. Change from moment to moment sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you usually do for, do you have the traditional Chinese massage? Do you do that?
I do not. I'm trained in it. I do parts of it, which would be more in line with what chiropractors do in America. So I do some mechanical techniques. I do some easy myofascial release or other things. I don't have the time to spend an hour or 45 minutes doing a full Tuina treatment. It's just not possible. And people will call oftentimes, it's kind of amusing, they ask if I can do an acupressure treatment. And of course, I could. But I'll tell you that real acupressure is a lot more painful than acupuncture. I know, you're scared of needles. We don't like shots. Guess what? I don't either. Shots hurt. You could fit about 15 of my needles inside of a tetanus shot needle, not the barrel, the needle itself. They're that tiny. I wouldn't be in business if people were hurting, getting hurt from what I do.
This is so true. We don't like pain. That's for sure.
No.
I noticed on your website you have functional medicine. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Okay, functional medicine is a little bit more of a modern natural medical technique. We might use lab testing, hormone panels, genetic testing, other things to find out what's going on with you, and then we'll use nutritional things to correct it. For example, one of the newest things evolving in research, which obviously Chinese medicine has actually hinted at for 5,000 years, is that your gut is the home of your health. 80% of your immunity comes from your gut. Your neurotransmitters are made from food in your gut, and they work inside a neural network both in your gut and in your brain. If your gut's not working right, your brain won't work right. There's a total gut-brain axis, which is completely being explored right now in scientific medicine, that Chinese medicine has emphasized for a long time. But with that modern functional techniques, for instance, fibromyalgia patients, their gut, they often have irritable bowel syndrome of some sort, either IBS-D or IBS-C, constipation or diarrhea. We can repair your gut, get it working better, And then we can go from there on treating and then, you know, concurrently be treating you with acupuncture for the pain of the fibromyalgia. You're going to get better twice as fast.
That's fantastic. And I also noticed that you also have sports medicine listed.
Yeah.
What would you do
with
that?
Well, that is when I'm treating. I'm a former semi-pro athlete, so I work with a lot of athletes. I work with several prima ballerinas, a lot of martial artists, a couple of sports teams. And when we're doing acupuncture for sports, I'm going to do something actually a little bit more to that traditional Chinese technique. Depends on the sport and the person, not with, you know, obviously I wouldn't do that to a high school sports practitioner or participator like I do up here in Marshfield. They get a more gentle treatment. But if I'm treating the prima ballerina for the Chicago Ballet Company and she hurt her hamstring, but she's got to perform in 3 days, I can use Chinese acupuncture, get her to the place where she can perform, and then afterwards fix the underlying problem. There simply isn't enough time to fix it before she has to perform, but I can get her to do it. And that's a very intense type acupuncture treatment, but those athletes at that time are willing to make that sacrifice because they really want to be able to do their job.
Yes, I agree. Do you at any point treat animals at this time?
Yes, you do. In the state of Wisconsin, you have to treat animals with the permission of the vet, and that's just looking out for your animal's best interest. One of the kind of funny things is that it is harder to become a vet than it is to become a physician. It's very strictly regulated. There's comparative anatomy and all sorts of things. It's very complicated. A dog doesn't work exactly like a horse. The acupuncture points are in similar places, but not the same. For example, the point, Tasha, kidney 3, is located between the Achilles tendon and the heel bone. Okay, on the inside of the leg. Well, that point on a horse is located in their hock. Same thing on a dog is located near what we would call their knee. So there's a little bit of a difference in the point location for animals. But then the really, really cool thing about treating animals, they're not going to fake it to make you feel better. you're gonna either see results because you're doing it right or not see results, either because you're not doing it right or because the problem is too severe. Acupuncture is pretty gentle. With all things that are more natural, sometimes the pathology can be moving much faster than the treatment can counter for, and that happens with people too. But people can, you know, with people there are ways you can explore integration with other doctors. And you can do that with a veterinarian if they're open to it as well. But sometimes those medical modalities or shots or prescriptions, there's a perfectly appropriate time and a place for those. I don't agree with them being a lifestyle, but at points they are needed and can be useful.
Yes, thank you. Probably have to bring my little puppy in along with myself soon.
I have patience to do that.
I am. How could you explain why? I know your mother was a medical doctor. Could you explain your reasons for not following the medical profession as we know it, Western medicine as we know it?
Well, I both did and I didn't. My Western background's kind of in neurology. I'm a nerd and I love neuroscience. But when it comes to treatment for pain conditions and chronic conditions, the Western approach it pretty much boils down to pills, shots, and surgeries in some combination thereof. It very poorly addresses the underlying problem. One evidence of that, we're in the midst of an opioid epidemic. If opioids fixed your pain, we'd be in the midst of a pain-free population. That's not the case. The opioid overprescribing happened. It was not really the doctor's fault. You know, before that happened, it was very hard to get opiate pain medications. And then there was kind of a push for them. There's a lot of politics involved in why that happened and whatnot. And as a member of the Academy of Pain Management, which is now is the Integrative Pain – I'm going to get the name wrong. I'm sorry. It's changed names now. But it's an Integrative pain national board and body, and it does work with integrative practitioners. And so I do work with them, and I've been certified as the diplomat by them as well. I don't have current certification because it's just very expensive to maintain. And for what I do right now in my small practice, it's a nice set of initials, but it's not completely important.
Go ahead.
So basically what it comes down to is I grew up in the martial community where natural medicine was part of it. I learned herbal compresses for martial arts injuries, something called Dit Da Jiao, which is called iron hitting wine, which is types of liniments. And this is what we did to correct problems in pain and in injuries in sports medicine. And let me tell you, martial artists, we hurt ourselves all the time. Yes, we hurt other people sometimes, but that's really not the goal of martial arts. But it sometimes happens when you're practicing or sparring or competing. Traditionally you learned how to treat those injuries as part of the martial arts. Now that's kind of not the way they're taught here so much in America. A lot of it's gotten away from that side of the culture. But if you watch the old cheesy dubbed over kung fu movies, oftentimes you find that master in martial arts has one of those herbal apothecaries in his back room. Why? Because they go hand in hand. And so that was, you know, that was my take on things. That's what I wanted to do. And physical therapy in the Midwest was about as close as I could get to that at the time I started that path. And by the time I finished it, that had changed a lot. I just had no desire to live on the West Coast or the East Coast.
Right. I totally understand. They are putting so many things now in vaccines, and I mean, it's just a mishmash. Children are getting autism after they have their vaccinations, and I think by the time they're five, they have on the list like 50-some vaccinations they're supposed to give their children. And
I think it's higher than that now.
Is it higher than that now?
I do believe it's higher than that now, and I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm anti-uneducated vaccinations. That means the parent, do your due diligence. You know, when we're giving kids that many shots with that many chemicals that close together, their body just cannot cope with it. And it's not really needed. This is a political and a profit-oriented endeavor. The CDC, who recommends those vaccines, holds patents in both vaccines and vaccine delivery systems. They're not an impartial third party, so you're not getting impartial information. Evidence-based medicine is what we have. It's good, but who pays for the evidence? Those same pharmaceutical companies, because they're the one researching the pharmaceuticals so they can promote their product. How many studies were done on a given product that had negative results? Who knows, because they're not going to publish them. That would be a very poor business model.
Yes, I agree.
Lot of evidence-based medicine from other countries that sometimes gets poo-pooed because it isn't done quite the same way we would do it in America. You know, I'm talking even Britain and other places. It isn't pushed by the pharmaceutical industry. It's done by research institutions. It's done by giant collectives in healthcare. Those have a lot of validity because those people aren't going to be generating profit from what their research shows. They're research fellows. That's what they do. They're PhDs. This is what they went to school for. And you know, within medicine, it's gotten away from that. Most of the research done now, it may be done by those same people, but is paid for and promoted for by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes. I see these commercials on TV. A new prescription med will come out, and they'll give all the benefits, but then they also are now listing the side effects, being death as one of them. Now, who wants to take this?
To discount pharmaceutical medicine, because, again, it has its place. There's a book out there by an MD in America called Death by Medicine. I don't really know what the current stats are, but the number one killer of Americans in the United States that beats out heart disease and cancer is correctly prescribed medication. I reiterate, that's not the errors. That is correctly prescribed medication that fits the condition. It kills more people than anything else. It used to be something like two fully loaded 747s going down a day of people dying from it. It's higher now.
That's incredible.
It's proven. People just don't know it because it doesn't get out there in the mainstream media. It doesn't get out there in the mainstream reading list. You know, the average person is told what to think now on the news. I contacted one of our local news stations about 2 years ago because they were pushing the HPV vaccine, the human papillomavirus vaccine. And all they were doing was giving the CDC stint on it. And I said, what happened to a balanced news story? How about the evidence that the, I believe it's the American College of Pediatrics, there is more than one association, so if I'm wrong on that, I apologize. But one of the national pediatric associations is against giving your kids the HPV vaccine. But you don't hear that on the news, do you?
Heavens, no. No, all you hear is what you should take, and we're, you know, they give gift certificates out.
Yeah.
One of the pharmacies, so you can get your flu vaccine. Gift certificates.
Yeah.
You know, whoever heard of that?
Right.
You know,
and the flu vaccine is one of those I don't agree with because it's based on what were the predominant strains in the Southern Hemisphere before they come to hit us. The efficacy of the flu vaccine, there's a lot of evidence on either side of it, and they're both equally damning or rewarding depending on your viewpoint and what side you fall on. But the rate of incidence of the flu really hasn't changed much. People like to quote the 1914, I believe it was, flu pandemic. Well, here's a couple of things to know about that pandemic. Number one, our treatments weren't the same. It was 1914 or so. Number two, there were a lot of people in very close quarters with poor sanitation. Why? It was the end of World War I. These people were in camps, in camp hospitals. So the transmission was skyrocketed. If we were to get another flu pandemic today with the way people live, with just our sanitation, I'm not talking even about medicine. I'm just talking about most of the world, first-class world, not third world, don't get me wrong. Most of the first-class world, which is us, living conditions, it would have to be an incredibly virulent, fast-acting strain. I'm not an epidemiologist, so I can't speak 100% on this, but you can do the research. You can look it up. It's true, and I know more people that have been injured by that vaccine, including some of my friends in healthcare, nurses, physician's assistants, even a couple doctors, because, of course, their companies make them get it. Some places they can't even wear the mask anymore. It's either you get the vaccine or you're fired.
I've heard that. And it's not only in Wisconsin. It's in other states, too. And a lot of
California.
Schools.
Yep, California's gotten really big. State of Wisconsin here, we have something. They won't tell you about it. But you can be a conscientious objector and get your child out of the vaccine if they're in a public school. Private schools are different. You want to know what might make you a conscientious objector? Well, how about this? You're a Christian, and there's aborted fetal tissue in a lot of these vaccines and a lot of these shots. So if you're Christian, by default, you're kind of against that shot.
Right.
Not to get into that subject. That's kind of a,
well,
you know, that
yeah,
can take
I
us down a different path.
It's even the thought, you don't know what that baby died of and what happened to it after it was aborted or where it was transited, or you don't know anything about what had gone on with it, let alone putting it in a vaccine.
Yeah, and I don't know either. I'm not a lab scientist. I don't know how they track that tissue and certify its sterility or whatever they do with it. I have no clue how all that works, but I do know that it's an ingredient in a lot of vaccines, or it exists in some way. The tissue exists in some way in a lot of vaccines. You know, the thimerosal, which was one of the primary ingredients in a lot of vaccines for a long time, is a mercury derivative. That had a lot to do with the autism, it's believed. The doctor at the time got ran out of Dodge, so to speak, and now he's not so much anymore. I don't know what his current state is, but people paid more attention to it. The adjuvant, which is another ingredient in a vaccine, particularly the whatever they use in the flu vaccine, I'm not sure what it is offhand, but it causes a lot of health problems in people. So it's not even the chemical for the vaccine, it's these other ingredients that are causing a lot of the trouble.
There like was, mercury, et cetera?
Yeah, mercury is in that thimerosal, which is that preservative. Now, a lot of the newer vaccines are actually thimerosal-free. So the mercury isn't so much a matter anymore. But other things, like that adjuvant I mentioned, and that's a chemical that's put in a vaccine for a very specific reason, and it's in almost all vaccines, and that's causing a lot of trouble. That's, you know, there can be vaccine injuries from something as simple as they hit a nerve when they vaccinated you. That's not very common, but it can happen. And you're no longer, the federal government enabled a law in, I believe it was the 80s, something to that effect, that you can't actually sue the vaccine company anymore. Now, there are federal vaccine injured cases, and that's how people are getting some of this money. But you can't go directly, you know, go sue Merck at all because you were injured from one of their vaccines. It's just not allowed.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, be very careful. And
do your due diligence. Find impartial information, not propaganda. And there's a lot of it out there on both sides. Don't get me wrong. There's just as much inaccurate information on natural health care on the internet as there is about regular health care. I mean, that is why, you know, my business Facebook page, Marshfield Acupuncture, is where I post a lot of research, and some of it's on both sides. And it's research that has been in peer-reviewed journals, or at least is citing work from peer-reviewed journals. You know, not all of it's 100%. Some of it's a little less strict than that. I'm not an editor, so I'm not going to go through everything that crazy, but I read the stuff. I look at their citations. And, you know, I'm just about keeping people informed. I don't post strictly anti-vaccine stuff on that Facebook page for Marshfield Acupuncture. I post the education information, and I state right in there, just be informed. When you get a medical treatment, there's something called an informed consent that you have your patient sign. With acupuncture, we're required to list the possible side effects, such as bruising, such as something called needle sickness, which is a vasovagal response, or in simple terms, passing out can happen. Usually if you have very low blood sugar, or if you're very fatigued, or if you're very old and very weak, and the treatment is particularly aggressive. But we list those side effects in that informed consent so you can make an informed consent. They give those paperwork to you, or at least some of it, when you do your vaccines for you and your kids and everyone else. Nobody reads it. They just look at it and sign it. Why? It's a lot of information in very small print.
Yeah. And those of us who need glasses, it's really small. And we tend to hurry nowadays, too.
Yeah.
And
I'm not talking, if you really want to know about a vaccine, get the actual package insert. I'm not talking about the sheets your pharmacist hands you. That's a very small edited version. You look at if you unfold the vaccine insert for the influenza vaccine, it's almost as tall as I am on both sides and something like a type 8 pitch font.
Oh, wow.
I'm 6 foot tall, folks. This is radio,
yeah,
you can't see that, but trust me, I'm that tall. And that's, you know, again, it's in very small print. I'm 47. I can't read that stuff without my reading glasses.
Yep, and that's the way they want it. My
exactly,
husband has...
You know what? Who's going to read all that? Who does?
Well, right.
Some of us natural health care practitioners read it. We've read, or at least read it in greater detail than just the sheets you're handed by the pharmacist. That's how you've heard me cite a whole bunch of stuff just off the top of my head so far. One, I have a really, really good memory. And I say it sometimes, I might be partially wrong. I didn't make notes for this speech. I never make notes. Unless I'm doing something at a college, when, of course, I have to cite actual things. And then I will do that. But I know a lot of this information because I've read a lot of this stuff, and I have a really good memory and can recall a lot of it. Not a lot of people are blessed with either one of those. And, you know, want to take the time to read that 6-foot-tall, double-sided, pitch 8, headache-making insert.
Yeah.
If you can get your hands
headache.
On it.
Yeah. Just you mentioning it, just, you know, yikes. And
yeah.
How many of us
read
the insert even from the pharmacist?
Right.
How many?
Well, and they give you those 8x10 sheets that are printed off of their printer, which is a very edited version. But people don't read those either. But those are obviously pro-vaccine. That's why you're getting them.
Yes.
So I have some of the side effects on there because it's a federal law. But it won't have everything, not by any means.
Well, hello, Doctor. This is Bob. I'm Sandy's husband. And once again, thank you so much for coming on our show today. And just for all our listeners out there, could you, you are just an encyclopedia of information and knowledge. Could you tell everybody how to contact you, where you work at, and if anybody wants to make appointments, how they would go about doing that?
Yes, I'd be more than happy to. As she said, I do have an NCAAOM, that's our national board, diplomat website. The easiest way to find me is on Facebook, Marshfield Acupuncture. I have a professional Facebook page for that. There's a contact me button on it. I don't always get back to them super quickly because I'm with patients. You can call my office number, which is my cell phone, 715-323-0548. You can go to the website. There's a button on there to request an appointment. That button will only give you the appointments that it can most easily drop you into. The complicated scheduling, I lock that out because I don't want anyone to mess it up. For example, almost always with a new patient, that first one-hour visit, I try and never overlap. I have 2 treatment rooms, and when I'm treating regular patients, I overlap all the time. But when it's you coming in for your first visit, I want you to have my full attention while you're here. So unless you need a weird time or we just can't make it work, that full hour is yours.
Since this is worldwide, people need to. You're in Marshfield, Wisconsin, in the United States, correct?
That is correct. Marshfield, Wisconsin, in the central of the state, in the United States. And the address is listed on the Facebook page, on the website. I'm downtown in our little town here at 243 Central Avenue. I do have patients just stop in once in a while because they see the sign out front and they're curious. And you're welcome to do that. I might not be able to talk at the time if I'm busy with patients, but I try to. At least I will definitely say hello and call me this time or stop back in here. I've got a little break. You know, I'm more than happy to talk with people about this. I love what I do. It comes across in what I say. Obviously, I care a lot about what I do. I'm in this to help people in any way. And even if that's referring you out to another physician because I think they're more appropriate, yes, I do that all the time. Or I don't always refuse the treat and refer out, but very commonly I'll say, listen, you've got to do this as well. I had a patient recently, without giving you their name, their symptoms were consistent, they're older, and I said, you know what, this might not be gout. There's a chance based on your symptoms it could be diabetes starting in. Please go get tested by your primary physician. It's for your best interest. You don't necessarily have to take the meds they recommend. That's up to you, but you need to know what's going on because you can lose toes and such if you don't know what you're doing with that stuff.
Well, thank you, Doctor. May I call you Dr. John?
Yep. I go by Dr. John. I go by John. When my patients see me out at Festival Foods here in town, please just call me John. And I say that all the time. If you're in my office, Dr. John's appropriate. On this radio show, Dr. John's appropriate because it's a professional environment. But, yeah, that's what I go by because Schreindel, it's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Could you spell your last name for people that want to look you up?
Yep. It is S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, H as in hot, R is in Ralph. E is in Edward. I is in Indigo. N is in Nancy. D is in David. L is in Larry.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. John. And
thank you.
I have a little bit of a different background than Sandy has, and I'd like to tell you, I first found out about Chinese medicine. Well, actually, I have an interesting history. Oh, back in the, somewhere around 15 or 20 years ago, I came across a bunch of books that were written by a doctor from Tibet. His name was Lobsang Rampa. Maybe you've heard of him.
I have.
You have? And for
I have. I actually
the audience,
oops, go ahead.
Yeah, for any of the listeners that never heard of him, he wrote a series of books about him. He was in Tibet, and he never said what his age was, but I imagine he was born in the early part of the 1900s, and he was raised in what was called the Shakpori Lamasery in Tibet. And what that was known for, it was Tibet's primary medical lamasery, where they had over like 5,000 kids in the program training to become medical doctors. And what I thought was really interesting, one of the things that really struck me was he always claimed that their medicine was over 5,000 years old, and it was just in a different class than Western medicine. And one of the things I thought was interesting is they were really big into treatment with herbs, you know, as you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way to go. And he said that some herbs were very hard to find, and he said every year they take about 20 or 30 volunteers, and they would actually climb up on the highest peaks of the Himalayan mountains searching for these mountain flowers that contain herbs that they use in their medical practice.
That's very true.
So is that an area of interest for you? You know, I find it quite fascinating myself. What is your experience with Dr. Rampa Lobsang Rampa? And, tell me what you think about him.
Well, I got more introduced to him through Tibetan Buddhism, and which I was interested in quite a while, and then I actually changed to Buddhism in Thailand, which is a different sect of Buddhism. It's a little older and just done a little differently. But, you know, they're all part of that Buddhist practice. Some of these herbs, sometimes people wonder why these decoctions, the teas, when you go get them, can be so expensive. Well, this thing grows on the shady side of a mountain facing northeast and can only be harvested between the weeks of X, Y, and Z. And that's exactly true. You can go get that plant at other times, and if you do, the properties aren't the same or what you need. For example, they tried to collectively grow these things in the United States, a lot of them, in an herbal farm, so to speak. The soil's different. The sun's different. The air is different. The water's different. The same thing that can make two different pieces of corn from two different farmers taste different makes these herbs different. And so the efficacy of the herbs can change. What they treat changes. And they've been studying them for 5,000 years the way they grow there. Western medicine has only been around. Pharmaceutical medicine has only been around since the 1900s. Western herbal medicine has been around much longer. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just different and not nearly as complex. The Chinese pharmacopoeia for herbs is insanely huge. Just the most common herbs is about the size of an Oxford dictionary. That's the common ones. That's not the uncommon weird ones. The Chinese formulary index is the same size. These are huge pieces of information. Even as a very well-qualified Chinese doctor, I could never know it all. There's too much information. I'm pretty smart. I'm not that smart.
Well, you know, one of my wake-up calls, you know, as I became more aware of medicine, was from some books written by a doctor in the Detroit area. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name now. I should probably take some of your medicine for Alzheimer's and memory lapse.
Well,
but
we use
anyway,
bingo in Chinese medicine.
but anyway, there was a medical doctor over there, and I think one of the books he wrote, just so you know who I'm talking about, was Salt Your Way to Health was one of the books he wrote. Well, anyway.
Oh, I think I've heard of that one.
Okay, well, one of the very, very interesting things that he wrote in one of his books was the comment about the companies that make vaccines, like Baxter and all these different companies. And he said that what these companies do is, you know, they're not coming up with all these drugs and medicines, you know, just out of the cold blue. What they're doing is they are taking the Chinese herbs, and they know what the Chinese herbs do. And so what they're doing is they're taking these Chinese herbs and taking these herbs into their laboratories and putting them under a microscope and doing all these chemical tests. And what they're trying to do is synthesize these herbs into chemical formulas. And that's
well,
what these drug companies do. And I thought it was very interesting. He said life forms like the human body and animals and everything have receptors in their body so that when you take an herbal medicine, these receptors accept these medicines and they fit in just perfectly like a jigsaw puzzle. And when your body no longer needs that herb, it'll kick it free as you become healed by those herbs that you're taking, these herbal medicines. But on the other hand, he said when these companies are manufacturing these chemicals, they have one thing working against them is they have to patent their medicine. I mean, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog pony show where they're in a lot of competition. So when they synthesize one of these medicinal herbs, they have to alter it by adding an extra couple molecules or molecule chains in order to get it patented by the governments and the overseeing agencies of the medical industry. And so the problem with that is when they take a natural herb and add an extra few molecules onto it, what happens is those chemicals do not fit in the receptors in your body like they're supposed to. It's kind of like a kid's toy where he has the squares and the circles and the triangles and the star shapes, and he tries to put a square into a triangular hole. It doesn't work. Or if he can cram it in, it's going to be almost impossible to get it out again. Well, this doctor was saying that that's what causes side effects when you take all these chemical medications, because your receptors aren't working properly and they don't release them naturally into your body, and that's where all these side effects come from. So would you like to comment on that idea?
Sure. This can get really long and complex. Well, a lot of what you said is very, very true. I'm going to add one more specific, though. For instance, statin medications for cholesterol. We all know, and they're getting pushed like crazy. Statins were derived out of the active ingredient in a Chinese herb with the English name of red yeast rice, which is a type of rice that has actually been fermented by a certain type of yeast, which creates red rice. That naturally occurring herb has not just statins in it. It's got hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands and 20 of thousands of little chemicals in it, some we don't know, and most we don't know how they interact. So when you take the herb, it's much safer. There's not been a case of liver shutting down from red yeast rice, unless it was adulterated with some kind of chemical. When they synthesize that active ingredient, which is what they do a lot of the time, they only synthesize that ingredient or maybe a couple of ingredients, because you cannot patent an herb. It's a plant. You can't patent it. There's no way to do it. You can patent, however, simvastatin, torvastatin. These, I'm using their brand names. They have chemical names, but it gets a little more complicated. So what they do, and guess what? Now all of a sudden you have to worry much more about liver problems and stuff. Why? Because one of those 10, 20, 30,000 or maybe 20 of those or maybe 100 of those or maybe 1,000, who knows, because the chemistry is so insanely complex, those other ingredients ameliorate or lessen the negative side effects of the natural statins in the herb. Those aren't present in the synthesized drug. That's why muscle pain, joint pain, all these other problems are side effects. It's not just always that it doesn't fit. It's that sometimes that's part of it, but it's also that sometimes, listen, I don't care how good of a biochemist you are, there's no way you can take an herb and explain every single biochemical property. It's just not possible. In fact, it's very difficult to do even with a pharmaceutical. Now they have, because that's when they apply for the patent, they have all that information. But that takes years of research and billions of dollars. Who's going to spend that money to do it on an herb with it they can't patent and can't make money off of? Nobody. You know? So we have this different kind of evidence called anecdotal, which is, hey, this stuff's been used for 5,000 years, and nobody's liver shut down from it.
You know what you're reminding me of is that medicine's somewhat like music. If you go into a orchestra hall and listen to classical music, when they're playing the instrument, not only do you hear the note that the musicians are playing, but you also hear all the harmonics. You know, many levels of harmonics. Well, what you're telling me is herbs are the same way. Herbs not only have the health improvements just for the herb itself, but it has all the harmonics of extra things in it that also heal your body and many different angles that you're not even aware of.
That's exactly true, and that was a phenomenal analogy. I'm going to steal that. I've never heard that before, but it was exactly perfect. Yeah, there's overtones, undertones. There's the blending of the different instruments. Yes, a trumpet sounds wonderful. A guitar sounds wonderful. But what does it sound like when it's part of a symphony? It's completely different, isn't it? It's a part of a harmony. There's that synergy going on with those musicians. I'm not a musician. I am a little bit. I play a few things, but not at that kind of level. And what these people are able to do, these conductors, to write all those different notes so they create that, these very famous composers, it's absolutely incredible. But that's exactly what a Chinese herbalist does when he creates these formulas. He's essentially, with herbs, creating a harmony. You know, like I said, you know, for instance, fuzi, aconite, can be very toxic. Well, what do we use with fuzi to decrease the toxicity in a formula? Oh, Baijiu, and I don't remember that one in English. Sorry, folks. I know all the stuff in Chinese, but often I don't remember the Western names, because when you use an herb and you use the Latin name, it only gives you part of the information. I'll give you a very quick example. Ginger, great for a lot of things. Everybody knows about it. All right, so we can't just say officinalis zinzibaris, which is the Latin for ginger. That's true. However, in Chinese herbs, that only is ganjiang, raw ginger. Shenjiang. Then there's ganjiang. Then there's jiganjiang. Then there's, which is honey-fried ginger. There's ginger fried with wine. And you know what? We prepare the herb these certain ways. That actually changes some of the information of it as well. For instance, raw ginger is a lot hotter than prepared ginger. Honey-fried ginger is easier on the gut, so people with ulcers or other heat problems can take the ginger without it irritating them. It's very complex.
Well, that's very interesting. And then on the flip side of all that is the chemical companies that make the drugs are like the musicians that make CDs. Whenever you have digital music, all you hear is just the single individual notes. They may be fancy notes, but all you hear is the note itself, and there are no harmonics whatsoever on a CD. I don't know if you knew that. And that's one of the reasons why the old, that's why the vinyl.
That's why I like vinyl.
Records coming back.
Yeah, I like vinyl for the exact same reason. Plus the acoustics of where it was recorded, all these little funny things that, yeah, non-super musical people don't know about. CDs are great. Digital music is great. It's super portable. I love it because I can take it with me. I can use it in my treatment rooms very easily. However, if you play a really, really good on a good system with the good speakers, you might be able to approximate what would you hear if you actually heard it in person. And I said might. It's a completely different animal when you go to a concert hall and hear it, isn't it? Even in the record.
Yeah.
The records are good, but it's not as good.
Well, you know, I was really lucky when I was younger. I got to go see Andre Segovia's last concert in Orchestra Hall in Chicago.
Oh.
And Andre Segovia was a real famous classical guitar player. And
yep.
He was.
I play guitar, so I know who he is.
Well, anyway, when I listened to him in concert in Chicago, he played for 2 hours, and all of a sudden he was walking off stage, and everybody said, encore, encore. Wait a minute, what happened to the 2 hours? It was just gone like that. You were just like
yep.
in a different world, and that was just the guitar, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just so fabulous, you know, and there's nothing to compare with live music or, you know, and like you say, if you, you know, now that LPs are coming back where you have analog music instead of digital, it's making a big comeback, and they have harmonics on it also. So that's really interesting. I got another question for you. You said that you spent time in the Chicago suburbs, Northwest Side. Where were you at on the Northwest Side?
Lake Zurich kind of area.
Well, you know where Hebron is? Woodstock,
that one doesn't ring a bell.
Area?
Oh, I know where Woodstock is. In fact, Orthomolecular Biotics, one of my functional medicine companies, is their headquarters is located in Woodstock. And one of my friends, Bhante Sujatha, runs a Buddhist temple in Woodstock, Illinois. And Groundhog Day was filmed there, folks.
Well, as a matter of fact, I grew up north of Woodstock. And I met Bill Murray when he was doing Groundhog Day right on the square. I met him in person right there. We were standing on the street corner next to the restaurant, right next to the Opera House there. And one of my very good friends, John Shrez, was running the Opera House, and I had the privilege of teaching him how to fly way back when. Got him to get his pilot's license. Wow. So it's kind of a small world there. But anyway.
It is.
The interesting thing there is, did you ever hear of an old elderly Indian doctor that operated out of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, just north of the border, just north of Woodstock?
I know Lake Geneva is very well, but I've not heard of that person. Lake Geneva having a lot of it's an expensive place, but there's a lot of people, affluent people from those Chicago suburbs and a lot of affluent Wisconsin people. There's a lot. Lake Geneva, for being a small-ish area in Wisconsin, has a ton of integrative care available for people. And so I'm not familiar with everyone there, but there's a lot of very wonderful practitioners even right now.
Well, this lady was about 80 years old back in around 1990. And she specialized in holistic type medicine, and she had a Royal Rife machine.
Yep, I'm familiar with that product.
Pardon me, you are?
Oh, yeah.
You,
Rife Frequency.
So she had one of those
familiar
machines,
with it.
And she healed everybody that came to her. It didn't matter if you had AIDS or whatever it was. She took care of everybody that came to her. And finally, the state of Wisconsin ran her out of town, and the last I heard was she was getting ready to go back to India. But I went to her to get treated for systemic candidiasis, which I had picked up from taking a bunch of, I had an operation when I was like in ninth grade in high school, and and I got a severe case of candidiasis, and she treated it and got me over it, believe it or not. And
I believe
but,
it,
you know,
I know exactly how it works.
Well, good. I got some of it back now, so I may come see you again. But anyway, something really interesting happened when I was visiting her one day. And you might find this kind of interesting because, you know, you love to help people. One day I went in for treatment, and while I was in the side room, I heard the phone ring in the front office, and the lady at the front desk answered the phone and then immediately came in and talked to this doctor I was with, the Indian doctor, and she came back into my office. She said, "I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to cancel your appointment for today." And she said, I have to drive into O'Hare and catch a flight to Atlanta. And she says, "Sorry, you know, I got to go now." And I could hear, you know, I was working with one of her aides was working with me, but she said, you know, "I got to get going." And I could hear her packing her bags and everything. And it took her about 10 or 15 minutes to get everything packed to go. And then the phone rang again. And when the phone rang again, I didn't know what it was. And then she comes back into the room I'm in, and she says, well, stick around. My trip just got canceled. And I said, "Well, what was that all about?" And she actually told me. She said that she had paid a lawyer $50,000 to help this doctor get out of a federal prison in northern Florida. And I said, "Well, what, you know, clue me in. Tell me what this is all about." And I'll tell you, this was a real education for me. And she said, "Well, I'm helping the doctor that invented the dialysis machine." And you probably know a little bit about dialysis from your work and everything. And she said, this doctor invented the dialysis machine. And for people that aren't familiar with that, people that have kidney failures, their kidney doesn't filter out the urine from their blood. So what this doctor did is he developed this machine that he could plug into a vein and circulate the blood through this machine that would take the urine out of the blood, and then he'd put it back in another vein and it'd kind of like circle through the machine and back into the person's body. Well, this guy invented that, but then later on he came up with this really brilliant idea. He says, "Well, most diseases and most microorganisms can be killed with oxygen." So he came up with this brilliant idea that if he'd take his dialysis machine, but instead of you know, removing, you know, the urine from the blood, he would ozonate the blood and kill off all the viruses. And he would filter out the dead viruses and then put the pure blood back into the person's body. So he killed the viruses and he filtered out the dead viruses so they wouldn't make the person sick and put it back in. And he made five of these machines, and as soon as the government found out about it, they went into his offices and they destroyed all of his equipment. They took over his office. They took everybody that worked for him, told them to burn everything, contact everybody they talked to, burn all that information, and they threw this guy into a federal prison and threw away the key. And he was in one of those northern federal prisons, northern Florida federal prisons. And this doctor spent $50,000 on lawyer fees to where they could actually even talk to him. And the judges... The judges that were overseeing his case wouldn't even let him be represented. They just put him in jail and threw away the key. They wouldn't even let the lawyers talk to him. He was there forever until he died.
Guess who else they did that to? You brought it up a little while ago.
Okay, so who else did they do it to? Are you asking
Royal
me how long
Rife.
This was? Yeah, they did it to Royal Rife. And
they've done it to almost
also,
anybody who's bucked the system, but we've come a long way. For example, now you can buy Rife machines again, even for home use, and they work because you can't hurt yourself with it. Ozone has come a long way. I just was working at a stem cell clinic called Optimum Health in Appleton, Wisconsin. We were doing stem cells and ozone injections. And guess what I'm going to start offering as soon as I can get everything underway here in Marshfield? Both ozone infusions, in other words, using the IV ozone, and ozone injections, because most old injuries are hypoxic. They lack good oxygen. You inject them with oxygen, and then you start to heal. Oxygen kills cancer. Cancer can only survive in an oxygen deprivation environment. So that's that whole pH of the body thing. Yeah, we've come a long way. It's still hard. I mean, you can now do ozone therapies. You can't. Here's the deal. When you do even what I do, and if you're using herbs, I can't say this herb cures cancer. I can never say that. That's illegal. The only thing by FDA law that you can say cures or treats a specific disease is a pharmaceutical. By the language of the way the law is written, that is a fact. So that's why when you get natural stuff, there's always this little FDA box on it. And it says, oh, this has not been evaluated by the FDA. It is not designed to cure, treat, or prevent any disease, et cetera, in ad nauseum. We have to do that, or we end up in jail like that other guy. There was a little Amish guy up here. Yeah. There was an Amish guy, I believe it was in Wisconsin, I'm not sure. And he was making a salve out of herbs and other things, and the Amish do this a lot. Only trouble is, he didn't have that disclaimer on his label, and he started selling it at one of the Amish stores. Guess who got a $10,000 fine from the FDA because he wouldn't comply with their labeling requirements? It's crazy. It is crazy. They don't. You know, the powers that be, the pharmaceutical companies, the CDC, the FDA, they are not always your friends. The FDA allows 33-plus chemicals in our food in America that are banned in other countries. They're not your friend. They're a political entity. They're the friends of the organizations that they are promoting to generate revenue.
You know,
that's it.
You know, there's a lot of... You know, I'm really glad you brought that up because there is a tremendous amount of confusion about, you know, a lot of people think doctors are there to help them, and other people are finding out that, you know, from friends that, you know, die from, you know they removed the kidney from the wrong person or you know, like
well,
that movie Coma or like what was that movie with Harrison Ford in Chicago where he was in the train wreck.
Oh, The Fugitive?
Yeah, The Fugitive. I mean, that's true, you know. I mean, so there's so many
people
that are...
I'm going to defend the MD because, to be honest, very many of those people really, really did go to school to want to help people. I'm not going to defend the institution, the way medicine is practiced in the United States as a corporate structure, which is what it is. The Marshfield Clinic used to be doctor-owned. It isn't anymore. Or there might be a few of those doctors left around. I don't know. It was founded so long ago. I'm not sure if they've all passed on or what. My friend, Dr. Bob, down in the Milwaukee area, He worked for one of the last doctor-owned healthcare facilities till it got bought out by Aurora Healthcare, a giant conglomerate, or moderately giant.
You know, Dr. Wojo Dr. Wojo and Stevens Point?
No, I don't.
He's on the board of directors over there.
Okay.
He's one of the most humanitarian persons you could ever meet, and he's on the board. And he actually travels all over the state of Wisconsin helping people. And
yep.
And he gives us our flight physicals for our pilot's license and stuff.
Oh,
great. He still does that just as a service to people.
Yeah, I'm going to El Salvador in the second week of February on a mission trip, and I'm on the medical team, and there's a Dr. Hegeman who works, I believe, in emergency medicine at the Marshfield Clinic. This is something like his eighth mission trip. He pays for it himself. His family's going, his wife's going, his son's going. These are people who really, really care about helping people. But when you get shoved into this corporation, which is what medicine is, your voice isn't always heard. And you are told, you know, for instance, let's get back to those statins. If they don't recommend them and it's not in your chart that they recommended you go on them, that doctor can get fired because that is part of the corporate policy. That has nothing to do with the practice of medicine. That is a corporate policy. So,
you know, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think there are so many doctors that want to help people. You know, I think they're doing everything in their power to help people based on what they've been taught.
And
you know, they're very sincere, and I think I agree with you. They're absolutely wonderful.
Yep. And you know what? There are some bad doctors out there. There are some bad acupuncturists out there. There are some bad ditch diggers out there. We're all human beings. And in human beings, guess what? We're fallible. We can make mistakes. We do our very best not to, most of us. But are there going to be some people out there that don't fall into that category, that practice medicine or, like I said, dig ditches? Yeah, of course there are, because there are those kinds of people in the human race.
Well, Dr. Jen, the reason I wanted to bring up the part about confusion, there's a lot of confusion out there, you know, about, you know, should I do this and should I do that? And there's one thing I'd like to share with you that we do, and what it is we have connection to the real guides and on the real side of life. And what people can do is it's a song that they sing, and you can sing it. It's called the new you sound, and you sing it like new you. You ever heard of that?
No, but it sounds very Tibetan.
Well, in a way it is, because a lot of these real guides did a lot of teaching over in Tibet. As a matter of fact, there's temples over there. Yep. And what it is when you sing that, like if you show intent, like do it for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night, it shows the real guides who are operating in and out of creation, also on the real, what we call the real side, they will hear you singing that new you, and they will become attentive to you. And if you have any questions or any doubts about any medical treatment or any fact of life, you can ask them for an answer to show you, you know, where you need to go, what the real answer is, what the truth is, what don't I know, and can you show me what I need to know? And they will show you in your dream state, or later on they will give you hints during your waking daily activities. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful service that they provide for mankind. So I just wanted to share that. And Sandy has a wonderful way of singing it too. I'd like her to sing it if she can.
Well, he sang it just fine. It's new. Like, hold out the last, but you can sing it in any way you want. We have I've heard it many different ways with different notes. New you, new you, et cetera. So that's what we do. We sing it 15 minutes in the morning right after we wake up, and 15 minutes at night before you go to sleep.
Oh, that's very neat. Ultimately, you had the right exact analogy with the music is harmonics. I have a degree in quantum physics. Everything is a vibration. There's a vibration, and then you hear about quantum medicine and such. And now I'm a very scientific-based acupuncturist. But ultimately, our bodies are atoms that vibrate at frequencies because of the electron shells and such. And the way the Rife machine works, for example, is there's a frequency to that disease state. And if you use an opposing frequency sine wave and you hit it, the math essentially makes both those sine waves become a straight line or nil, a nil point, where neither one exists anymore. neither the treating frequency nor the disease frequency. Ultimately, according to quantum physics, everything comes down to that, including light.
Yes. Back in the day, Pythagoras, he had a big complex, and he had rooms. And the diseased person, whether they had an emotional, mental, or a physical problem, he would put the person in the room and then assign a musician with the correct music to balance out what was wrong with them. So it's been used a long time, but a lot of
still
people
used
don't
today
know.
Too. In China, there's music therapy. You can Google Zen harmonies for healing and all sorts of things like that. It still exists even within our field.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I come from a music background. I sang a lot. I sang in symphonies. I've been musicals, operas, etc. But when you mentioned, or Bob mentioned, both of you mentioned that the real experience, I'll cite an example. If I was singing with the symphony chorus, we had a 200-piece orchestra in front of us. And I actually stood behind the kettle drums and the French horns, kind of in between them, and there is nothing like that type of music when it's live versus a CD. I mean, there's nothing like it.
And you know by what it does to you. I mean, my own personal example, one of my favorite artists is Enya.
Oh, yes, Enya. Mm-hmm.
She gives me chills on CD. I had the privilege of seeing her in person once with an orchestra, or at least an orchestral arrangement.
Yeah.
It did more than give me chills. It completely changed the inner workings of my person at that point. I was transported, like you said. I was no longer really there. I was being carried along by those harmonies. It's a very surreal but wonderful experience to listen to good music that way. And it doesn't have to be Enya. I also saw Metallica perform with an orchestra. It was just as amazing. You know, your music it varies. And I may not like, you know, I like Haydn. He's kind of the hard rock of composers. You know, And I like Yo-Yo Ma. Man, listen to Yo-Yo Ma's cello. It darn near is so good it almost makes me pass out. you know,
I know
those,
the feeling.
Those haunting tones he creates with that cello. And anyone who listens to him or has seen some of the Asian movies, even American movies, he's done soundtracks for. What you get on that soundtrack is amazing enough, but then to actually sit in a room with him doing it, it's otherworldly. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Wagner and Parsifal?
Of course I am. Die Valkyrie. I'm German. I'm very familiar with Wagner.
Oh, very good. Das gut. Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, and that's about the extent of my German. I can speak Mandarin pretty well, but my German is horrific.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I never picked it up either. And I don't know anything I should say about Mandarin. But it's...
I've spoken some of it.
Well, this music, and it can influence society. I know back in the day of Paul Twitchell, who had started the corporation of Eckankar, which it no longer really is the same since he passed away. But he wrote a little book called Eck and Music, and in there he cites a lot of examples, and one of them was the Galloping Polka by Stravinsky. He said anybody who listens to that behind closed doors will eventually go insane. It is so important and breaks up the body the bodies. We have more than one body. We have the physical, the astral, the causal, mental, etheric, and then finally who you truly are on the real side. Don't ever listen to it. It said when discordant music is played in a society, society goes down along with the music. And it's the the masters of music, Wagner and Beethoven and Bach and Mozart and all the classics, is what really heals the body. And as you said, it's quite an experience. I've had experiences where I have dreamt of Luciano Pavarotti singing in front of me. This is in a dream. And it was just as real as if you would sit in the audience. It was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the four tenors and some others. You know, yeah. And music is sometimes created as a reaction to what's going on in society, and sometimes it's created as an influence. Look at the old folk musicians. You know, look at some of the 60s music, Dylan. I love Dylan's musical writings. I don't prefer to listen to him sing, but just what he writes. It's a poetry, essentially. It's a different art. You know, he's written some of the greatest songs that people love that he's not performing, too, you know. Or, you know, who else does a lot of that on the country side of things? Kris Kristofferson and Willie Nelson have written more music than you probably even know about because they don't just write country.
probably. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
people
don't know a lot about Kris Kristofferson anymore because he faded from the movie limelight. But he's written a lot of music and been in production and all sorts of things.
Okay. I'll have to look that one up, too. We are kind of running out of time here, and I would like to open the lines, if that's okay with you, Dr. John, to see if anybody has any questions for you.
Yeah,
or
would I
would
be more than happy to do that.
Say something. Just feel free to speak, who's ever on, if you have some questions.
Yes. Hi, Dr. John. This is Val from Huntington Beach, California.
Hello.
Yeah, it's a great show. Thanks, Bob and Sandy. It's like being in your living room and you have a guest over for coffee or something. It's a very, very nice show today. Dr. John, yeah, I've got some experience in martial arts too, namely Sistema. It's a Russian system. And
the system.
Yeah,
yes, I know Sistema and Sambo a little bit.
Okay. So you know that a lot of their focus is on recovery. So one of the things I've been doing is, to avoid injuries and just get into that place where you're just, it's just bad for your body, actually. So recovery, especially for the soldiers, is important for them to come back from the field and be able to get a massage or just heal their wounds somehow psychologically as well as physically.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I do with that is the dousing, which is popular with Sistema. It's the cold water dousing where in the morning I go and dump 2 5-gallon buckets of water over me to boost my immune system, kind of shock the system, bring the core heat up, the temperature up to kill any virus and bacteria. It's been good. So I was wondering if... You know, along the lines of cold water therapy, do you do any kind of ice acupressure at all, or do you have any experience with that? Because I'm dealing with some prostate issues.
Yeah, see,
and I wonder if
you can
help in any way.
Cold systemics are like when they use ice baths in sports medicine. That ice is simply there as a method of numbing those people at that point, and it does create some healing. But the kind of healing you're getting from the dowsing or the kind you get like when you walk out of a sauna in the mountains, that's a little different. Ice for acute injuries is great, but the doctor, and I can't remember his name, who coined the phrase RICE, rest, ice, compression, and elevation, has since actually retracted both the rest and the ice, except in acute states. So in other words, you just turn your ankle, you darn well want to ice that thing. However, if you have an old chronic injury and you ice it, it feels good. But now you've just tightened up that tissue that was already tight, and you've decreased the blood supply that needs to get in the tissue to heal it. So you both slow down.
Dr. John, we're running out of time. We got about 20 seconds.
Oh.
Tell us who you are and where to reach you one more time, and then the show's going to be over. And thank you so much
All
for
right.
being on.
Thanks,
You're
doctor.
Welcome, Dr. John Schreindel, Marshfield Acupuncture, 715-323-0548, or Marshfield Acupuncture Facebook page or a website. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions that you send my way.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. John. It's been wonderful hearing from you, and maybe we'll do this again sometime.
Thank you. It was great. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now.
We should have set it on 2 or 3 hours.
Well, I have to. Well,
I know.